Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Eight people now confirmed dead in that school shooting in the Austrian city of Graz, and we'll bring you more on that very shortly. Now, though, 10 days on from Operation Spider's Web, which saw cheap Ukrainian drones inflict billions in damage to Russia's air force, how are events in Ukraine and advances in drone technology changing the face of warfare? Well, for their analysis, I'm joined by former British Army chemical and nuclear weapons expert, now a fellow at Magdalen College, Cambridge, Hamish de Breton Gordon, and by defence and security expert at the University of Bath and former NATO analyst Dr. Patrick Bury. And you're both welcome. It's good to have you with us. Dr. Patrick Bury, I'll begin with you on this Operation Spider's Web, as I mentioned there. Will you tell us a bit about it, first of all, how it worked, why it was so successful?
Yeah, so good morning, Claire. It's been obviously what we know about it is mainly coming from the Ukrainian Overseas Intelligence Agency, the SBU, which carried out the operation. And it was in planning, according to them, for 18 months. Probably the most impressive part of it is that they were able to keep it secret and penetrate so deeply inside Russia using the ISO containers and inside hidden drone swarms. They were going for about five targets, all Russian strategic air bases. One of them, which they successfully hit, Irkutsk, an air base there, which is like 6,500 kilometers behind the front line. Another one up in Murmansk, which with most of the damage was inflicted. And they were able to, as I said, covertly get the trucks into location. It looks like they hired, using the kind of gig economy approach to sabotage, hired unwitting Russian drivers to actually, you know, bring the containers into the target area.
When you say containers, yeah, what do you mean?
Like literally ISO containers, so the shipping containers.
Like you see in the back of an Arctic.
Yeah, modified. Right. And we knew this was a threat that had been coming for about 10 years, at least in concept, that you could fit either missile launchers or drone swarms inside these, but the execution is another thing altogether. But there's certainly been companies selling missile defense systems inside and numerous other systems, to be honest, inside ISO containers for a long while. Because they're so ubiquitous, it's pretty hard to pick them up, and they can lay dormant for a long period in areas of, certainly in ports and things like that. So anyway, yeah, one of the innovations as well they did, which actually got them around, we think, in some of the air defense systems. You imagine these are pretty high targets. They're on relatively high readiness around the clock due to the war in Ukraine, and they would have electromagnetic defenses, etc. And it looks like, the according to the SBU anyway, that they managed to get around those by using the drones locked onto Russian 4G networks so that weren't actually jammed. Mm-hmm. So they're able to kind of take that and get in. And yeah, and it looks like, I mean, in terms of the damage caused, difficult to say, but I think the Ukrainians are probably overegging it a bit. From what I've seen in terms of like confirmed aircraft damage, it's about 11 or 12-ish. Which is still significant.
Yes, you know, it's still significant. Yeah. I suppose the question we're asking, Hamish, is does this change things? I mean, do we see now that there will be vulnerabilities when it comes to European or American air bases to similar style attacks?
Well, I think it highlights a number of key issues. First of all, the person who controls the electromagnetic spectrum really controls the battlefield, and Spider's Web is a sort of personification of that. There's also talk that Ukrainians have developed a way of navigating these drones using AI rather than using GPS, so that they are sort of outside that electronic spectrum. And the ability to have a strategic impact, have many aircraft were destroyed here, it's really shaken the Kremlin. I think people also might not be fully aware that a few days later at Bryansk military airfield, a couple of hundred kilometres into Russia, Ukraine did something pretty similar and destroyed a whole bunch of Iskander rockets and a lot of helicopters too. So I think this ability to have a strategic impact was something that hitherto we haven't seen as a strategic capability is really important. And I think the other element to it, although the principles of war are not changed at all, the sort of way that the fight is happening really should make Western countries stand up. And And certainly the British Strategic Defence Review, which was announced last week, you know, I think, you know, pays a great nod to it. But, you know, it's all very well us trying to replicate, you know, what works and what doesn't work. At the end of the day, I suppose it all comes down to money. And as Mark Rutte in London yesterday said to the British government, unless you're going to spend 5% on defence, you need to start speaking Russian. I mean, that was a bit off the cuff, but you sort of get the way where he's coming from.
Now, Patrick, is this something that the Ukrainians will be able to repeat again? Or once you do it once, will the Russians find a way to stop this sort of attack again?
Usually what happens in these situations where sort of a tactical innovation comes in, and this one with some strategic effect comes in, you have a window where you can do it again. And it's interesting, Hamish, you know, mentioning the Bryansk attack. And then it starts to close because of the countermeasures and the opposing force getting their act together and working out how to try to close those gaps. So usually it's fleeting. It's the same when you've seen a weapon system introduced like the Storm Shadow or the Scalps. You know, they take the Russian air bases by surprise and then they get their house in order and move things back and disperse them, and it becomes more difficult to target them. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't completely rule it out, but you'd be certain there's, you know, not only in Russia, to be honest with you, people all around the world, Air Force commanders looking at the threat now and looking at how you can covertly insert, you know, basically drone swarms, which can have strategic effect. And what does that mean? So you'd expect, you know, different nations. And I don't think, you know, nations closer to home are as vulnerable along that electromagnetic spectrum, if that's indeed how they did it, as the Russians were. You know, there were some probably wider gaps there potentially.
But at the very least, you'd be checking every truck that came into your country, right?
Well, this is the point. And this is why they did. You know, what was interesting about this operation was that it was, you know, really closely followed by a massive information operation by the Ukrainians. One, to show the world we still have cards, we're still in the fight. They wanted to do that. Two, you know, to sow distrust and caution in the Russians. And again, if suddenly you have to start, and they did, there were huge pictures of huge backup, long queues of trucks getting searched, as you can imagine, by the Russians, you know, in the wake of the attack.
Hamish, on the Russian side, and I saw some footage of this, close-up footage last week, these drones the Russians are using that drag a long fibre optic cable behind them so that they can't be jammed, and they're able to seek out movement, so they're searching through until they find their target. They can be used to devastating effect too, can't they?
Well, yes, to a degree. You know, the pace of innovation during warfare is incredible, and we're seeing that, you know, across Ukraine at the moment. And the tethering drones by fibre optic cable is, you know, is a reflection that the electromagnetic spectrum is the controlling factor here. But it's not new. I mean, when I was a tank commander in the first Gulf War, the battlefield was littered with cables, because a lot of the anti-tank guided missiles were actually wire guided, as it were. And it reflects that. I mean, you know, I don't want to be too simplistic about it, but no doubt some sort of electronic scissors will come and will blunt that particular thing. So I think it's a reflection of the changing nature. What is, I think, really profound is, you know, the mass use of these drones that cost very little money. I mean, hitherto, countries like the UK and the US have invested in really expensive, capable drones. Air defence is now the sort of, you know, the king and queen of the battlefield. If you lose a $5 million drone, you've lost a lot of capability. You lose a $500 drone and it, you know, barely sort of shifts the dial. So I think we're going to see a lot of these changes in innovations and who can stay one step ahead. Of course, you know, Ukraine, as the other speaker so clearly said, you know, is looking for some Trump cards, because President Trump doesn't think they've got any. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully Trump will be clever enough to realise that actually Ukraine is society needs to back and give them the wherewithal to make sure they can hold the Russians and, more importantly, get the Russians to the peace negotiation table as soon as possible so they can get a just ceasefire.
Well, Patrick, maybe this changes the calculus on all of this ramped up defence spending that we're seeing now, that perhaps the focus won't be on heavy machinery, heavy weapons, and there will be a shift now towards lighter, more inexpensive drone technology.
That's certainly one of the areas where they need to get ahead of the curve. And I mean, the Ukrainians can produce, as Hamish says, you know, can produce these small tactical drones, which they use in that attack. There's obviously the longer range, heavier ones as well, but the smaller ones for $500, whereas the Ukrainians are on record saying the cheapest they can buy them in Europe or off the US is $1,000. So they're at the tip of the S curve there. So yeah, that's of course, air defense, massive, you know, now, absolutely massive. Now that Putin has shown he's happy enough to sling ballistic missiles with conventional warheads at anyone, you know, should he wish, you know, that's a new kind of consideration for the air defense people. You're seeing the money go into finally into nukes, you know, that the idea you're going to have to be able to deter and potentially deter Europe, will the French and the British indeed, maybe without the American umbrella and the backstop in terms of their stockpiles. So you're seeing money go into that as well, and submarine warfare. So yeah, in terms of the UK case, it's about the Navy. The Irish should be getting amongst us too, frankly, not in terms of nuclear, but we need more naval capability given we've only got one vessel at sea at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that is certainly accepted across the board. The consensus seems to be that we need to invest, well, I mean, at the very basic level, it is accepted that we need to pay our Defence Forces personnel more and perhaps start from there. We'll leave it there for now, but thank you both, Hamish de Breton Gordon and also Dr. Patrick Bury. Thank you both for being with us.